Thanks so much for joining us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. The new 5G wireless network is coming, but what will that mean for weather forecasting? That's one of the things we'll be talking about with our weather guys today. Steve Ackerman in the studio with me. Steve, good to see you.
It's good to be here.
And Steve is also a professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison, as is John Martin, who's also here. Hi, John.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Great. Thanks so much for being with us today. We'll talk about what 5G wireless has to do with weather. We'll talk about May temperatures that just passed. We can talk about the hurricane season. And, of course, we'll take all of your questions, so I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. And so let's talk about this 5G network. Steve, do you want to give us a background on this?
Yeah, so, you know, in cell phone communications, of course, they're wireless. And so, you know, they talk to each other via radio waves or microwaves or other energetic
electromagnetic.
I know, we were just talking about Chernobyl before coming in. It's our radiation's on my mind. And then they take the spectrum and they divide it up for different communications for private and for public. And right now they're looking at a network in the microwave around, I think it's 24 gigahertz. That means much to many people, but it's a area in the atmosphere where water vapor weakly absorbs and emits radiation. And we use satellites to measure that, and that tells us how much water vapor is in the atmosphere, and then that feeds numerical weather prediction models. If that frequency is sold off to cell phone type of activities, where there's a lot of activities like around urban areas, what you'll end up doing is generating a noise signal. And then that'll make the satellite observations less useful for doing the forecast. And, of course, if that spreads globally, then it really could have an impact. There's been a lot of discussion now from the head of NOAA, who is a weather forecaster, comes from Panasonic Forecasting, talking about the potential impact that could have on weather prediction models if those frequencies are sold off.
So it could, in other words, it could maybe not ruin but hurt.
Well, he said, and I'm not sure how much I buy this, but he claims that if we lose it and lose that signal, that'll take us to weather forecasting back to the 1980s. If you think back then, we were doing, you know, maybe what, accuracy of one day versus what we're doing now.
Yeah, maybe out to three
days
in the best conditions. Yeah, nothing like now.
Nothing like now.
So it's under discussion.
It's under discussion. The current administration wants to sell them. This comes up every now and then. I think it also came up in Obama administration when they decided not to sell them. Well, and there's a big meeting in October, a global meeting, to now talk about those frequencies and, you know, whether or not there should be international agreements of what they can be used for.
Yeah. So even if one country, at the current state, if one country did it,
it impacts, right, all the numerical models because we use that global data now. That's the advantage of satellites. The different satellites from over the world are shared. All the weather satellites are shared.
Wow. So. Well, we can... On that happy note, let's talk about some other...
I'm going to turn my cell phone off.
Yeah.
I don't think I shut it down.
Oh, man, let's talk about some other things. You know, I was getting after Jill this morning, my producer, for not calling me to tell me that I should be wearing a jacket to work today because it was kind of cool.
You know, we realize this is radio. John is in a T-shirt and shorts.
Once June 1st comes around, it's summertime, and that's all there is to it for me. But today's a tough day.
Well, May seemed cooler than usual. Was that really the case?
Yeah, it was two or 3 degrees below average.
Yeah, I think it's hard to be below average in May. And so when you say 2 to 3 degrees, we had a couple of winter months that were more than that below normal, but somehow it's easier to get a little bit below normal for a month in the winter. But, boy, May was unrelentingly difficult.
Yeah,
cold,
that's true. You're
rainy.
Not going to get those cold air Arctic outbreaks in
Yeah,
May.
That's it.
That's right.
You're
so
doing it by incremental, every day is colder than it should be for the whole month.
So, and it was all coming from the Arctic, right?
Much of the flow this month of May was from the northwest, yeah, and that was a prolonged cold period. And in fact, it's funny, we had smoke in the sky.
Yeah, that's
the
right.
Last
that came
day
from
or
the
two
northwest.
Of the month.
Yeah,
it came from the northwest, and the reason why that's kind of an early time for a big enough wildfire to spread smoke from Alberta all the way down to us or wherever it was, Saskatchewan. Yeah. But that's because when we're cold in the manner that we were cold in late April and May, it's warm in the western part of Canada, southwestern Canada. And sure enough, that combination gave us the smoke to end the month. Amazing.
I play in a golf tournament in Saskatchewan, always the week preceding Memorial Day. So I usually coming back on Memorial Day. And it was 70 degrees on the golf course in sort of south central Saskatchewan, or maybe central Saskatchewan.
It's got to be nice weather.
It seems unusual.
It was cold here. Yeah. I know. Yeah. Texting back and forth with family and friends, they were all saying, oh, it was wet and cold.
Yeah, ceaselessly. What a month.
But it's typically that week is warmer there than it is here.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, you know, there's something about the way the hemispheric circulation sets up and gets itself reorganized coming out of winter. It still takes a long time to really come out of winter and abolish the troughiness that's over the Hudson Bay, which is a characteristic of the flow. And the ridge over the West Coast is almost there all year round. So it's really interesting. I didn't know that. I was going to ask you, is that normal, 70 degrees in Saskatoon? But maybe it is in May 20th.
Yeah, it's actually a couple hours north of Saskatoon.
Is that right?
Yeah, so it's up there.
Yeah, wow, it's amazing.
And I've been up there for 25 years playing in that tournament. And
that's beyond.
It's been the rare event when it was cooler up there than it was in Madison.
Yeah, that's
Wisconsin.
So interesting.
Yeah, so that's there you go.
Beyond anecdotal when you have 25 years.
Yeah, right.
Steve Ackerman and John Martin, our guests, join in with your own weather or climate questions at 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's talk about the National Climate Assessment. What is it, and why is it important?
It is something that Congress, back in the 90s, probably.
I think beginning 1990 with with an act, I can't remember the name of, that's probably when it was initiated,
That every 4 years they bring together scientists and all different disciplines, not just in atmospheric sciences, but also in ecology and things like that, and look at the current state of the climate and how has it changed in the past in comparison to the previous reports. So it's a pretty important document in terms of understanding and documenting, based on peer review work, what is the status of how the weather has been changing and the climate has been changing. So it's a pretty important thing. Unfortunately, the current administration is pulling back on that, which is, just wrong.
Yeah, it's wrong. It's obstructive. It's not going to get us to progress in trying to make sure we understand what the problems are. It would be sort of the analogy would be if you have a busy street in your town and you decide, let's stop doing traffic surveys there and let's not put a light up and let's let people see how they go. You know, let's see if there's any accidents. We'll see what happens. That sort of attitude, which our president says a lot.
And so the data that they're looking at for that are just...
It's all data that's, collected by... It's the U.S., so it's just in the United States.
Yeah.
So by the National Weather Service and the Climate Data Center are folks that collect that data, and then they all get together and analyze it and make sure that it's statistically rigorous and look at what's changed in the last 4 years.
Let's take a call. Mitchell in Appleton, it's your turn. Hi, Mitchell.
Hello, Larry and everyone. So my question here is I'm doing audio recording, and I'm up here in Appleton, and I've been, we've had some storms, but a lot of times the storms seem to dissipate out, yet north and south of us, of me, and even coming back east, the storms seem to pick up strength again. And I've been trying to figure out why this is, but I thought maybe you guys might have some insight. And possibly then some suggestions where I could go to get a little bit more of that thunder and lightning.
I don't think it matters where you go.
No.
It's going to go around.
That's right. It's because you're trying to record it that it's doing. I mean, it's almost physical. Not quite, of course. But the lake is usually one of the reasons why people say, like Winnebago or the southern part of Green Bay, some people will say that has an impact on moving thunderstorms one way or another and so avoiding certain locations. That's most likely not true. it may just be dumb luck that you're striking out at a time when you wish you weren't. There can be circumstances in any particular event that are a little bit more tangible than that, but without seeing all that data in front of us, it's hard to make any statement beyond that. I would say, though, that you're probably just the victim of dumb luck in the last few weeks or events, however long that's transpired.
How portable is your recording equipment?
Very portable. Yeah. I don't mind traveling. The one thing I did notice was a lot of these storms are coming from the southeast up north. So, they're heading southwest.
They're heading to the northwest.
Northeast. Northeast. So I don't know if that plays into anything.
Probably not. That'll change as the summer goes on, too. We start to move into, about a month from now, early July, we'll be moving into a regime climatologically where a lot of our thundershowers come from the northwest on the heels of a big ridge to the north and west of us. And so those can be really violent. They can be the big blowdowns. So that even that's not going to stay the same.
And I'm just hoping that a week, not this coming weekend, but the weekend after next, it's nice up there because I'm coming up for your parade, Mitch. Because my daughter will be marching
awesome.
The Lakeside Marching Band. So I'm hoping it doesn't rain that, at least that weekend, that Saturday. Well, we're talking today with Steve Ackerman and John Martin, our weather guys. I'm Larry Mueller. We're going to take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with our guests. So you stay with us. We'll be back shortly. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're taking a look at climate and weather today with our weather guys, John Martin and Steve Ackerman, back with us, both professors in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison. So what weather question is on your mind? Are you curious about changing weather patterns or maybe a recent weather event? I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. And you know what? I think we'll take some calls here. Let's go to the phones, and Eric in Baraboo will give you a chance. Hi, Eric.
Hi there. How are you guys doing today?
Great. Good. Appreciate the call.
Well, I had a question regarding an application on my phone. It had asked me if it minded if I used data to help with the weather forecast, and I wondered if you guys had any insight on that.
So I'm not sure which app you're using, but I know I use
the Weather
one.
Channel.
Oh, okay. I use one that's called MPing, and what that is when it's precipitating, you go and you enter the type of precipitation, so snow or rain or hail, and then that goes off and it's used by Oklahoma, I think, and the National Weather Service to try and assess the algorithms they use to convert the radar signal into a precipitation signal. So I think personally it's a really useful way to engage trained observations of folks in the public who have a real interest in weather and being able to use that to improve forecasting or validations of forecasts.
Very cool. Does that help, Eric?
Yeah, that's great. Thanks a lot, guys.
Mm. Yeah, appreciate the call. Well, let's take another call. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Email us your photos, your weather photos, or your weather questions to ideas@wpr.org. And now we'll go to Louise in Dodgeville. Hi, Louise.
Hi, good morning. I have a question about climate and maybe looking ahead to September. I know the past couple springs have been cold and rainy, and I know late gardeners, getting stuff into the fields, crops. So I'm wondering if the growing season is going to extend into September a little bit, if you have any thoughts on that. And then I guess climate, Wisconsin climate going forward, are springs going to be colder and wetter?
Well, I don't know about this September, but certainly we've seen a lengthening of the growing season because of the global warming and its impact on the region that it's happening, that typically it starts earlier in terms of a variety of measurements. One would be, you know, when is the last frost, and it's extending into the fall in terms of when is the first frost. We are way behind in growing degree days, which is a way of measuring the weather in some ways in terms of accumulating temperatures, because plants need a certain temperature to grow. And so we're in corn, I think, 60, 70 degrees days behind schedule. So how are you going to make that up in September or in the fall in terms of lengthening the growing season is not something easily forecasted, I don't think.
Yeah, you can't say much about it ahead of time, except I wish I could remember the exact somewhat obscure statistic that I heard not long ago comparing June to September insofar as maybe even July to September, insofar as when do you think you get the most, something like when do you think you get the most abnormally warm days? And I believe it is September. It's not
really,
July. So we already tend to have, you know, a little bit of built-in padding in the month of September around here for our growing season, it seems to me. We don't have too many extraordinary cold air outbreaks. There aren't many frost events that occur in the month of September in the southern part of the state anyway, and then northern Illinois. We have to wait till mid-October for those things usually around here. And so, and very often then the harvest is well in hand. So I think we have a little bit of time built in case the spring is unusually chilly, which apparently is more commonly the case than the fall is chilly. Maybe that's the stat.
Maybe that's
I heard.
The end.
Yeah. So that's more commonly the case.
Yeah.
All right. Louise, does that help?
Yes, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Give a call. Hurricane season started, the official start.
Saturday.
Yeah.
And it runs until the end of November, November 30th. Do those dates mean anything anymore?
You know, it's a way that we classify the hurricane season, much like we might classify the winter storm season or the thunderstorm season in a region. But clearly, Mother Nature doesn't really care about those dates because we've already had a hurricane. In the Atlantic, I think that was May 23rd.
Yeah, it's about a week before the official season.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And we'll peak around the first week of September for a number of storms historically in the Atlantic Basin. And it's a pretty broad peak around that. So it starts really revving up in mid to late July and then goes all the way to the end of the month, September, early October in earnest. So it means something. But what I'm really worried about is I think we're not particularly well prepared for our season this year. I think there's been some problems at FEMA and various other things on the federal level that we're hearing about people holding up, you know, funding for already disaster visited locations. It doesn't really bode well for what might happen as the year goes on. So I hope that we can get our act together as a nation on that.
Yeah. Right. Is it what's the trend on hurricanes? More hurricanes, harder ones?
Yeah, I don't know if it's the trend as much as a prediction that I'm going to quote. I guess I don't know about the trend, but I know the prediction with a warming climate is One of the avenues people are saying is maybe not any more storms, but the ones that do occur will be more intense. I think that's about what people are saying,
right? Certainly what people are saying.
Oh, boy.
So the chance for damage, of course, goes way up in that case.
Let's turn to Carl in La Crosse next. Hi, Carl. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Sure. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm moving, and I was concerned about flooding in the area I'm moving to. It seems very wet and marshy and mosquito-y. And I was wondering if you had any information, input, insights.
So you're moving from where to where?
Moving from Viroqua to New Lisbon. New Lisbon is very wet. It has been the last year, and I don't know about the year before. But it has me wondering if I'm making the right move.
Yeah, I don't. What kind of rivers are up by New Lisbon? I'm trying to think of that area now, geographically, because that's where you really can get the flooding, right, when you're near a river or something in our area where it really floods out, or a lake. So it depends on how big the body of water
And the nature of the plain around the body of water matters, whether it's a river or a lake. You know, sometimes they're very steeply sloped, and the river valleys are steep, and the lake beds are steep, and then other times they're really flat, like the Red River of the North and the Dakotas is really flat, and it's easy to go over the banks. So I don't know enough about the region to be able to say that. Do you know yourself if that's one of the reasons why it's been floody lately?
Well, there's lots of little rivers, and
yeah.
it's really
yeah.
flat.
Yeah, and flat. That's probably not a good combination. It's probably easy to go over the banks.
I probably wouldn't want to be right next. I might not want to have a house right next to one of those rivers
right,
or creeks.
Right, yeah. Unless I was on it. If you're on a local hill, you get the best of both worlds. You live in a beautiful landscape, and you're on a hill that's only 50 feet high, and then you have nothing to worry about probably.
Yeah.
But I think you also said if it's really marshy as well, too, that helps to ameliorate the flooding as well.
That's
that can
true.
Help control
yeah,
it.
That's
so
true.
That could be the good side, although that generally means mosquitoes, too. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're going to be mosquitoes regardless of
where you are, right? It's
where
Wisconsin
you are.
Summer.
So I recommend a screened-in back porch.
Yeah.
Right.
For sure. There you go, Carl. That's what we can help you with. Maybe somebody else
in that area
can call in and give us a little advice on that. Mm-hmm. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Hurricane season, we just talked about. Tornado season, there have already been some pretty big ones in Oklahoma,
yeah.
if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's been a bad year already for tornadoes, not just Oklahoma. I think there were several other states.
Iowa, too.
Iowa was hit. Texas, parts of Texas were hit. Arkansas. Tennessee. So it's
12 days in a row of hurricanes, right?
Tornadoes.
Oh, tornadoes.
Yeah, it was an amazing stretch there in the middle of the month of May, yeah. getting toward the end of the month. So, yeah, it's been a very bad season already, and really is rounding into its maturity right about now, beginning
yeah.
of June.
Yeah.
So and expanding northward towards us as the summer wears on.
Yeah, because here we haven't had, in the state, I can't think of a tornado yet.
I don't think there has been one in the state.
I don't think they come in
yeah.
yet, no.
Yeah.
No.
So,
it's more a July and August threat for us.
July yeah. and August for us. Kenneth in Janesville called but couldn't hang on and wonders if you guys could talk about the melting of the tundra near the North Pole, if you know anything about that or comment on it.
Well, it's one of the really scary aspects of a warming high latitude. So the polar regions are warming faster than anywhere else, at least the Northern Hemisphere pole. Warmer than anywhere else in the rest of the globe under the current climate change that's underway. And one of the things that's dangerous about that is if the permafrost starts to melt, it's trapped a lot of methane clathrites, I think they're called. So methane is trapped in the ice, and methane is a very potent greenhouse gas. So its release upon the melt of those things makes the feedbacks radiatively to warming even stronger. And methane lasts in the atmosphere once it's released for almost a century. It doesn't get rained out very fast. And so once it's released and back in play, it will be a devil in the works for at least a century. So it's really a scary potential feedback that's already underway. It's not as if it's hypothetical. It's happening. The question is, will it get worse? And unfortunately, it appears it will.
Yeah. I wonder if, and I think I've read where it was actually going a little faster than earlier predictions.
I think that's the same thing. The melting of the permafrost is a little bit further along than what projections had suggested. I believe I've heard the same thing.
Yeah, I have too with regard to the changes are occurring faster than what's predicted. And then there's not just the climate and weather aspect of it, but there's the construction aspect of it. You know, so
yeah.
when they were building the oil pipelines and buildings, they assumed that the permafrost was going to stay permanent,
yeah.
hence perma. But that's not happening. And so now what have you built on? You know, if you're not down the rock, bedrock.
Right. I saw a headline in either a newspaper or a periodical of some kind over the last couple of weeks that made the big point, really important point, that ice is infrastructure at high latitudes in the
right.
Northern Hemisphere. It's exactly your point.
And there could be whole communities.
Yeah, right.
It's already happening in the state of Alaska. It's probably true also in northern Canada, but our own citizens in Alaska on the North Slope are suffering terribly from this.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Steve Ackerman and John Martin, our guests, join in with your own weather questions or comments, or maybe you've got a weather experience to share. Love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions or comments. Have you seen any predictions for summer weather in the Great Lakes area?
I actually looked at just recently the 1 month outlook and the 3 month outlook, and as you might expect, they're actually predicting it to be colder than normal. But yeah. I think that's just part of this spring trend that we have. That statistics are just pushing it that way.
I think that's right. In fact, I haven't looked most recently. There was a new one that came out not long ago. The last time I looked was right before the end of the term, late April, and the 3 month forecast then for May, June, and July said equal chances, but surrounded by places that were a little bit wetter and a little bit cooler. Correct. And I think it's exactly what you're saying. So,
Chuck wondered if you could talk about something we've talked about in the past, but it's, I think it's always worth talking about, El Nino and El Nina, and how they're different and if there's anything in the winds for us with those.
Yeah, the El Nino... It's really two sides of the same phenomena. The El Nino is when the it's part of the El Nino Southern Oscillation cycle that is non-periodic, doesn't happen on a regular basis, but it happens periodically nonetheless. And El Nino is characterized by relatively warm waters in the Central Pacific Ocean at about the latitude of the equator and spanning it north and south a little bit. And the La Nina is the opposite, when it's colder there, and I think warmer along the South American coast, right? So I think that's how it goes. And that changes the position of tropical thunderstorms, which have a huge influence on weather systems in the middle latitudes, somewhat indirectly, but demonstrably. And so we keep our eye out for that. It's especially prone to having an impact during the wintertime, not so much as it does, not so much in the summertime. So... And I don't know what the current state of the tropical Pacific is.
Yeah, we're currently in an El Nino
still,
and they're forecasting it to continue into September, I think.
Okay.
But as you said, the real impact is on our winter weather,
And
so we'll see how that develops over the year.
So it could be a worse winter?
Well, it's a little too early to tell yet, because it's not a real strong El Nino that's going on right now. So I think we'll want to see what will happen in July or August to see what the forecast is pushing for El Nino.
And if it's a strong El Nino where the water is unusually warm at unusual longitudes in the Pacific, that tends to make us wetter and a little warmer than normal during the wintertime.
Yeah.
So some would characterize that as a blessing, a nice winter. I would not. So,
less snowfall is what John's saying.
Yeah,
actually more, but wetter. So
yeah, wetter. More frequent events that are precipitating and then more of them in the form of rain at our particular location. Might not make much difference the further north you go into far northern Wisconsin, but it makes a difference, especially in the southern part of the state, in precipitation type.
What research is going on over at the at your department that you guys would like to talk about?
Oh, man, so many interesting things. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I'll tell you the one that I'm working on right now, which is really kind of interesting because it's different for me. But we've been looking at using satellites to monitor the cracks in the Arctic sea ice pack. How many are there and have they been changing with time? What the cracks are is that the wind or the ocean currents will be moving that ice pack around, and then they break open. And, you know, you've probably seen it on the lakes as well. You've heard them if you live in Madison.
Yeah, that's right.
And that generates a lot of energy into the atmosphere. And so we've been trying to look at it in terms of if the Arctic sea ice is thinning, then my hypothesis was that we ought to see more cracks. But that's not exactly what we're seeing, so we're trying to figure out now. Mm. Yeah, we don't really know why that's the case.
And how do you monitor the cracks?
So we can see them in satellite imagery. And so we've developed an analysis tool that can look at the sea ice pack and detect where the cracks are, and then figure out how long they are and how wide they are and how much area there is.
That's amazing.
It's just awesome. I mean, when you think about it,
it's awesome. I just think it's a really cool project.
It's really awesome. And some things we're doing in my lab is where I'm really interested in whether or not the jet stream, we have two really species of the jet stream in both hemispheres. One's the subtropical jet, which is on the border between the tropics and the extratropics, and another is the polar jet, which tends to be most vigorous during the cold season in either hemisphere. And we can find them independently, and we're trying to figure out whether or not they've become more sinuous over the last 70 or so years in the data. And the reason why we're interested in that is because to the extent that the jet stream tells us something about the nature of the flow in the whole lower troposphere, closer to the ground, it also tells us whether or not if the flow has become wavier, it tells us that we're more likely to experience strong cold air outbreaks in the wintertime, sometimes punctuated by unusually warm episodes in the winter, and then similar things might happen in the summer. I'm focusing on the wintertime. And that tells us something about likelihoods of how a warmer planet might manifest itself in terms of some of these types of extremes. And so having fun trying to understand a piece of that giant puzzle. And then we're also trying to figure out what is the wintertime variability of the Pacific jet stream, because it has a huge influence on weather over North America, including, of course, here in the central part of North America, right where we live. So we're trying to understand that better and figure out how it's related to tropical thunderstorm activity during the cold season, which has its own cycle quite independently, but they sometimes work together to really conspire to change things over the continental United States.
That's pretty cool.
It's very fun. Yeah. It's very fun. Yeah.
And a little bit of work, too. Chris was wondering, has a daughter who's going to be graduating from high school, not this year, but next year, and wondered about the careers in your area and what kinds of courses and what kinds of things might she be expecting to take at the university.
So I think one thing that maybe surprises some people is the amount of math and physics courses that we need to take in order to get ready for that. Because, I mean, looking at the atmosphere, it's driven by, you know, classic physics and mathematics. And so that's one of the bigger things I think that people get surprised at. Of course, there'll be courses in our department if she ends up coming here.
Yeah, it's a whole really feast for the person interested in weather and climate science. As Steve says, it's based on classical physics and non-classical physics.
Physics
the physics of radiation and electromagnetism is part of it as well. And then and the language that describes all of that is high-level mathematics. So it's a really great feast for the person who's interested in those things. And we have all kinds of informal activities that support and nourish those interests. So a young lady like the caller's daughter who may feel that she's a little bit of an outcast in terms of her interests because nobody else around in her immediate community shares them, she will find a home in our department because everybody in the department shares some aspect of those same interests. And I tell you, when you get to such a place, and I don't mean it's an outcast in the sense that you've always felt like an orphan, but there's always something up weird about the person interested in the weather. And it's really great to find yourself nestled in with about 50 other people like that and pursue those interests.
Are you talking personal experience?
Oh, no, I've heard.
in some high schools, and I don't know about this case, but in some high schools, there may not be the math and physics level. So the help, there's got to be some, is there support and help for a student coming in?
There definitely is. And I was just about to say it even unprompted, that the notion that when you go through a lot of those classes, and they're difficult, they're not easy, it would be, in the face of that, easy to forget what you're striving for. And we will not allow you to forget what you're striving for. And we won't allow you to forget that you're interested in it at a phenomenological level. So it's a really great combination of being, you know, tutored and coached by people who went through the exact same struggle and yet found at the other end of that struggle that their interest in this science was furthered, not diminished, by the rigor that you impose upon it.
It's pretty cool. So, Chris, tell your daughter to keep at it.
Right. Stay with it.
Tell her to come and visit.
Yeah. Another good idea. And speaking of visiting, our weather guys will be back next month. And we'll do, or maybe at the end of this month, I guess.
End of this month, that's right.
The last Monday of June, they'll be here. And so it's always great to have John Martin and Steve Ackerman from the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison. They'll be back. Tomorrow at this time, folks from the Wisconsin Energy Institute will be back to talk about solar energy and why the costs have come down. And so that, looking forward to that. And certainly stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network.